So we should just jump right into it today.
Let's do it.
We have a lot of content and a little bit of time. So we're talking about the next hot thing. Are you seeing people excited about all kinds of new investments that are coming into the world?
Not so much investments, but I would say companies or stocks in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants a piece of whatever, however they define AI.
Yeah.
They want to participate in that. Sometimes...
Yeah.
Overly so.
So you haven't got any questions about SpaceX, OpenAI?
Oh, no, I absolutely have.
Okay.
Everybody wants to buy IPOs. There was another one last week. I don't even know anything about the company. I think the ticker is CBRS. We're not making recommendations, but sometimes they're penny stocks. Sometimes they're brand new stuff. And I'm just like, listen, this is counter to your strategy. So if you want to do that, go on over there.
Yeah. The reason I brought it up is that there's been a ton of news about these like mega, like bigger than ever IPOs. Like
yes.
SpaceX announced that they're filing for their IPO this week. And it's funny, they're all racing to beat each other because they know whoever goes first kind of gets the first crack at it.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever goes second gets kind of what's left of the capital, because there's clearly limits to how much money they're going to raise. And so they're racing. And it's also funny, they're suing each other. You saw, you know, basically SpaceX, which is controlled by Elon Musk,
mm-hmm.
you know, the biggest, and SpaceX has an AI component to
yes.
it. So they sued OpenAI.
Like I saw that.
Musk did, and he lost. But he was able to slow them down just enough to get his IPO paperwork in first.
Mm.
Yeah, Dirty Mackin, they call that in the game.
Oh.
So before we get started, just a quick note.
Play it.
Just a quick note. This podcast, as you know, is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not individualized financial or investment advice. We share general insights and opinions, but not personal recommendations. The market changes quickly. You should always do your own research and consult with a professional before making decisions. See, I did that nice and smooth.
Not
word for word, but I got through it.
Like a hip hop junkie.
Yeah. So IPOs. And by the way, we did a show called the IPO Mixtape in 2020. It's like in our first 10 episodes, it's before Andrea joined the podcast. That's a very good deep dive into IPOs, how they work and all that. We'll do a little bit of time on IPOs today. We're also going to spend a good amount of time talking about meme coins, because in addition to getting calls about Anthropic and OpenAI.
That's the other one.
There's been a bunch of random cryptocurrency coins that clients have hit me up about recently that have required me and you to do a bunch of research. And it's like all coming back with the same answer. Like, be careful.
Do you find that this happens most often when we're in times like this, times of uncertainty, or like what we look at as stability in the economy? When people are looking for, I don't know, I haven't done any official trend analysis, but that seems to me like what's happening.
Yeah.
Everything's expensive.
I don't know. I'll tell you, I feel like investing is in vogue right now. Like people want to do it.
Mm.
And it's when people are excited about stuff, it's easy to get their attention and easy to throw some messed up stuff in the mix as well, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
So let's talk. We'll start by talking about IPOs just to give you guys a little color on what they are and what's coming. And we'll spend a good amount of time on these meme coins as well. And I will acknowledge, like, neither me or Andre, we're not like cryptocurrency experts, but we do know enough to be dangerous. And so we'll get into that a little bit. So what is an IPO? An IPO is an initial public offering of stock. And I have to say stock because like these cryptos aren't stocks.
Right.
Right. Like there's new coins. I read a stat that showed that like there's up to 50 million cryptocurrencies out there.
50 million?
50 million. Because there's these things called meme coins.
Right.
Meme coins can be created by anybody in like a day or two.
Okay.
And they're being created at an alarming pace.
I still didn't think there were 50,000.
Yeah. No, there's basically between, they don't even know how many there are. So there's a website called CoinMarketCap, and there's between 10 and 30,000 like active cryptocurrencies, meaning they're created and someone has invested in them. But then there is 50 million meme coins out there.
No cap.
99.9% of them are dead, inactive, or scams, basically.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wait, you said 50 million.
50 million.
50 I thought million. Initially you said 50,000.
No, there's between 10 and 30,000 like real cryptocurrencies.
Right.
But then if you add in the meme coins.
That's craziness.
50 million.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And only two coins, Bitcoin and Ethereum, make up 75% of all the crypto market cap in the world. So we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some IPOs, some cryptos, some meme coins. But really today's show is about, you know, giving you a framework for understanding, you know, how to evaluate that next hot thing when it comes to investments, whether it's a stock, whether it's a cryptocurrency. So first we talk about IPOs, you know, initial public offering.
Because bonds are never hot.
Yeah, no one ever talks about a new bond offering.
I know. Yeah, I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah.
That's all.
I did career day at my kid's school today, so I broke down stocks and bonds for some high schoolers.
And nobody cared about bonds.
No, they were, I was like, yeah, what if I borrow, can I borrow 100K? What's my interest rate? I was like, what if I invent Google? What do you want? He's like, oh, I want a piece. I'm like, nah, bro, that's a bond.
Right.
That's how I explain bonds. Bonds are a loan, you get your money back, and that is it. Unless I go bankrupt, in which case you get Nathan's. So with IPOs, like the reason why companies go public, it's to really raise capital from the public. Like prior to going public, companies have to raise money by going to angel investors and venture capitalists and from revenue. Revenue is another way that companies raise money. But like going public opens you up to anybody that has a brokerage account, whether you are, you know, mom and pop, whether you're a institutional investor, like you can raise money from all of these people at once. So that's a big one. Another one is just
like the original GoFundMe.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Except you're getting something back in return.
Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe.
You hope. But what's crazy, like
over time,
going public, like there's pros and cons, like when companies do it. Like you and I both worked at public companies, and we know that's like, you know, there's good and bad things about them. Like one, they've got access to capital, but you know, at the same time, there's like no more mystery to what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like,
like
our company today is private. Like the kids, of course, ask me, what, how much money do you make?
Right.
Like a lot.
Right. Right.
But like, if you're a public company, you got to tell, like, you got to tell exactly how much you're making. You got to give the salaries of your highest paid employees. You got to give their stock trades. You've got to do annual reports, quarterly reports. You got to do 8Ks, which are like, you know, any material news that comes out from the company. You got to file a proxy statement. Like, there's so many different requirements that come with it. So that's why not everybody does it.
You got to tell them, I make enough that my money is making money while I'm here with you.
Hey, there's that. There's
and
that.
And I'm not at work.
There's that. So companies go public to bring in capital, to increase awareness of their product. I'll tell you, I never heard of Rivian until they went public.
Mm.
You know, Rivian is one of these electric truck makers or SUV makers.
Yep.
To recruit and retain employees is another one. Like when you have stock that you can give to your employees, it's a great retention bonus. Like I have a friend who's thinking about jumping ship to a new company, and the main thing she's looking for is that pre-IPO stock.
Like golden handcuffs.
That's a big one. And then finally, shares can become a currency for buying other companies. Like often when you see merger transactions, acquisitions, they're not usually spending cash. They're spending stock, which is like Andrea bucks. Like it's not real money. Like it's shares, right? And that becomes money that can be spent effectively. So this year—
Does Morgan have bear bucks?
They probably do now. I'm sure we do.
They probably do now.
Bear bucks.
Brown has bear bucks. Their mascot is also bears. Yeah. So they have bear bucks.
Yeah.
Some of our schools are slow.
What y'all got? Pirate booty?
Pirate.
Hampton pirate booty?
Okay. It's pirate bucks, but that pirate would bucks. Be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like pirate butts.
But not.
So let's go through some more stats. So This year, as I mentioned, there's pros and cons to companies going public. There's a lot less companies going public right now. Companies are staying private longer. But when they go, they're really going. So less deals this year. But the companies that have gone public have raised more money than ever.
Mm.
This first quarter, there's been a 35% uptick in the capital raise compared to a year ago. We've already raised $40 billion from IPOs this year. A big one was just the other day. Cerebras, you see that one? It's a big one.
Yes, that's the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's the one you were talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, the funny thing is, my dumb butt, there's another company called Cerberus.
Okay.
Cerebras, Cerberus. Different companies, sound the same. Cerberus is like a hedge fund.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, they're going public?
Mm.
Then I'm like, why do they keep spelling it wrong?
Got it.
Like, it's so easy to get confused. Like, these little mixes of letters, little mixes of tickers. Like, you got to do your research.
For sure.
Because these companies are nothing alike. Right. Cerberus and Cerebras.
Right.
It sounds like the same.
They sound like the same thing.
Yeah. So, other stats. Here's some research on the biggest IPOs in history. I was kind of astounded by this. The 10 biggest IPOs, and I'll name them, and these are U.S. IPOs. Some of these are like not American companies, but mm-hmm. they're U.S. listings, right? Mm-hmm. So Alibaba is the biggest. And when I say the biggest, I mean their valuation of the company at the time it went public. Because there's two different concepts, right? There's one, what is the company worth? And one is how much am I raising?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example, right? So let's say my company is worth $1 million. But I'm only raising $100,000 today,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I'm saying that I'm selling 10% of my company for $100,000,
mm-hmm.
which effectively values, think about Shark Tank.
That I was literally thinking about Shark Tank.
Values my company at $1 million, yeah. right? So Alibaba, which is like the Chinese version of, is that, I always get them mixed up. One is like Amazon
Alphabet.
And one is like Google.
Yeah, Alibaba's Google.
Okay, so Alibaba is like the Chinese answer to Google. $169 billion.
Crazy.
Meta, second biggest ever, $81 billion. What's crazy about Meta? Meta is worth almost $2 trillion now. So like Meta, aka Facebook.
That's almost 2,000%.
Yeah. Uber's another big one, $75 billion. Mm-hmm. AT&T back in 2000.
AT&T Wireless, yeah.
Because
I looked
wireless.
At that, I was like, AT&T was public way before wireless. 2000. Yeah, I realized wireless, it was wireless. Yeah.
$68 billion. Rivian, I just mentioned that one, $67 billion. Didi Global, that's another Chinese one. Which one's Didi? Didi is like Uber in China.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
UPS in 99, my dad was part of that one. I remember that one. I can't even pronounce his next one. The ticker CPNG is another one. Enel, which is an Italian utility company, and then ARM, ARM, ARM Holdings, which is a semiconductor company. So those are the biggest, the 10 biggest. And when you analyze what happened to the stocks, right? Half the time the stocks have gone up and they're worth more than the IPO price
mm-hmm.
today. Half the time they've actually gone down and like
yes.
a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of them, like Rivian, for example, I'm not picking on them. Like Rivian is down like 75% from its IPO.
Oh, yeah.
There's some big winners, of course, like Meta, aka Facebook. That stock is up over 2,000%. But like literally, like there's no way to know when you buy it. Because I was like, I got in on the IPO of
right.
Meta.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt foolish because it IPO'd at like $40 or 38. It
mm-hmm.
IPO'd at 38.
Mm-hmm.
I bought in at the IPO and I bought some after it started trading, and then within a couple of days it was like under $20.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, they got me. And now the stock's at 600.
Right. So it begs the question, and I'm sure it shows in a different chart. Maybe it's not something we're talking about today, but I'd love to see the trend on what happens in the first, I don't know, week,
yeah,
month, 6 months, a year, and then look further out 5, 10, 15. Cause I think I wonder if sometimes people focus too much on getting in right.
Yeah.
On day one.
No, that's a fact.
And I'm like,
big time.
Don't make that your goal necessarily.
Because
it's going to be hard to get in on day one for many investors.
Yeah. The trends in general are that the results are mixed on IPOs.
Right.
often like things that dictate whether the stock does well. I mean, it's like there's a lockup period for like sometimes it's the first 2 years where the insiders can't sell shares.
Yeah.
And so once they start selling, then that stock kind of dips after that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the stock gets hot for a little bit and then it flops after that.
Yep.
Like I remember being in on Airbnb. That's another one that's actually down since the IPO. That was a big one. It went up. It went up even more.
Mm-hmm.
And like today is lower, right? So there's a lot of excitement that pushes these things up. And it's like a almost like a coin toss as to whether it's going to be a good investment or not. So again, just highlighting why you really have to do the research before you get in. Like if when I say do the research, I hate saying that generally without telling people like, well, what kind of research are you talking about? I mean, I always like break it down to like when I talk to kids about stocks, it's just like buying a business, right? Mm-hmm. If I were buying a restaurant, I'd have two questions. How much are you selling the restaurant for? And how much profit?
How much profit is there?
Are you making?
Mm-hmm.
And do
some
I like...
companies are not profitable.
Do I like those terms?
Right.
And if it's not profitable now, when is it going to be profitable?
Mm-hmm.
So like profit is a big one. Like are they profitable? And and then is it worth it? Like if the restaurant is profitable, but you know, it makes $100,000 of profit, but it costs $20 million. Like that ain't, it's profitable, but that's expensive as heck, right?
Right.
So you got to be thinking about that. How much revenue is the company actually making?
Mm-hmm.
How much profit is being generated? And what's that, you know, we call it the price to earnings multiple. When you take the price of the business divided by the earnings, right? You take that restaurant example, you know, I said $20 million divided by $100,000. That's a really expensive, you know, business. It would take me years and years and decades to get my money back.
Right.
You know, it's just a way to look at it.
Yeah.
Another way that you can value a private business that's going public, what's the value versus the sales of the company?
Because
that's one thing that's really interesting. Like some of these companies, yeah, they're not profitable yet, but they're expected to be profitable in the future. And so you could look at them on a sales multiple, right? And it might be expensive based on that too. And we'll get into that a little bit. We'll look at some of these big ones and we'll look at some of those metrics.
And those are projections anyway. So
yeah,
it could not pan out that way.
Mm-hmm. So a couple ways to get shares, you know, kind of in the IPO, before the IPO, after the IPO, right? So ways to get shares before the IPO, aka pre-IPO shares, a couple ways to do this.
You could be a venture capitalist or an angel investor, which means you got to have some cash to be able to purchase
and
them.
Some connections.
And some connections.
You can't just be like, hey, here goes $100, player. Let me.
Right.
Send me
I'm going to let you hold this.
Yeah.
And then you send me some shares.
Mm-hmm. Another way is you can be an employee of that company. Like a lot of like these OpenAI folks, like we're starting to get calls from them. Like they have a bunch of shares and the company's letting them sell some of their shares on the open market.
Yeah.
Well, kind of on open market, like in the private market situation.
Yeah.
But being employees of an early stage company that goes public is a way to get some shares.
Mm-hmm.
And then another is you can buy the shares through a third party marketplace. A lot of our clients are hitting us up about this. Now, these third-party marketplaces, often you're buying shares from, it could be from venture capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
It could be from employees that are allowed to sell some shares. There's a couple marketplaces like Hive with two I's, Equity Zen, Forge Global, which ironically Schwab just bought, Forge Global. That's another big one. It's a marketplace that just connects buyers and sellers for pre-IPO shares. But a lot of times the price you pay in these marketplaces could be significantly higher than where, like the IPO price or where it is trading later. Like just because you bought it before the IPO, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed to win.
Well, there's that. And I don't want to glaze over the fact that most of the time, these options for getting in on these pre-IPO shares require you to be an accredited investor. So you have to be earning over $200,000 annually or have a net worth of over $1 million. Not including your primary residence. So
for some, that's a deal breaker.
For some, that's a deal breaker.
Absolutely. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll keep talking about how to get in on the IPOs. We'll also go through some of these big deals that are coming and just give you like 10-second overview.
Something to
Our
think
thoughts.
About.
Take it or leave it. Advice is worth what you paid for.
Well, this is free, so what is that saying?
Hey.
It's all good. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
Momentum Advisors. no middle. At Pfizer Show.
So we are back. Before the break, we were talking about how to get those shares before the IPO, and we talked about those steps. What about during the IPO? Have you been a part of any IPOs, Trey, where you've helped people get shares?
I have helped people get shares. I have not purchased pre-IPO or IPO shares.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience with that because I used to work at Goldman, and Goldman was a part of a lot of the biggest IPOs. And it's like, it's kind of a sketchy situation. You put in what's called an indication of interest with your broker or advisor, financial advisor. I got to say broker because a lot of times there are brokerage firms that you're getting the shares from. And you basically say, look, I would like, let's say, you know, 1,000 shares, right? Okay. Then if it's a good deal, they might give you 5. And you're like, oh man, I wanted more.
Yes.
So then you're like, all right, I'll take 10,000 shares of the next one. And then you get filled on 10,000 shares and you're like, oh,
what?
I only wanted 1,000.
I was just playing.
And it turns out you get the good allocation on the bad deal.
Right.
And the little allocation on the good deal. And so like, it's frustrating to buy during the IPO, frankly.
Yeah.
And so I stopped doing it a while ago. If somebody really presses me, I'll look into it. But like, it's a funny game.
Real talk, I didn't start actually buying individual stocks until I was a couple years in as an advisor for myself.
Yeah.
I just didn't. ETFs and funds were fine for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't afraid. I just didn't. It just seemed like more trouble than what it was worth.
Yeah.
I'm particularly talking about IPOs, but like even stocks in general, I just wasn't doing it.
Yeah.
One thing I'll
tell you, with these new deals coming, these OpenAIs and SpaceX.
Different story.
The deals are so large.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you almost anybody that wants shares.
Can get them.
Will get them.
Yeah.
And you may not want them. Like, that's the funny thing. It's like, you want the good deals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's going to be good or bad, but I'm saying because it's so big. Because, like, I'm telling you, the big ones is when I've gotten filled. Like, I've gotten filled on Meta.
Mm-hmm.
I got filled on Rivian.
Mm-hmm.
And I can name 10 other ones that, you know, some turned out well, some turned out not so well. But, you know, it's like a coin toss as to whether you'll get them, but on a bigger deal, your odds of getting shares are larger.
Yeah. I'm also, we don't have time for that. But I am thinking about the clients, the friends who are wanting to get in on these deals, but it's like, where's the cash coming from? Do you have cash?
Yeah.
Are we selling something? What are you willing to get rid of in order to get into this? It's like they didn't think about.
They've fallen in love with everything in their portfolio. They're not trying to give up anything.
They're not trying to give up.
Or pay the taxes. Anything.
Or
that's the next thing.
Taking money out of their portfolio for something else they're doing. So I'm like, well, you just took out $10,000 for something else. So where is the money coming from to make this purchase?
I can tell somebody hurt you, Andrea.
No.
I could tell one of your clients got on your last nerves.
No, it was just a question.
Yeah.
It was just a question that I posed.
And then finally, anybody can buy the shares in the open market once it starts trading.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes the stocks open at a higher price. Sometimes they actually go lower.
Yep.
Like sometimes they go lower on that same day. I remember I talked about Facebook earlier.
Mm-hmm.
IPO was 38 and like within a couple of months, it was at 17.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's at 600. Like,
if you hold though,
you're not a sucker.
Just gotta give it time.
Just because you have more information by the time the thing has gone public. Like,
right.
You can see where it priced, where it listed. You can see what the trends are. You know what I'm saying?
But who was patient enough to wait until it got to?
Yeah.
Even if you weren't patient enough to wait to get it to what 600, were you patient enough to wait for it to double?
I'll tell you, I was a fool with Facebook. Like.
You got out?
I got out early. I didn't get out at a loss, but I definitely, I was like, yeah, I think this thing might be a dud. And I was very wrong. Like, I got back in later. Like, we tell our clients not to do. The object is to buy low, sell high.
And we.
Sometimes, like, when a stock drops.
Sometimes we do the opposite of what you know is the right thing to
when
do.
When a stock drops, you just start to lose faith in it. Or sometimes you're just embarrassed.
Yeah.
You don't want that on your report. When you sit down with the client, is one thing that didn't go well. You're like, you know what? let's get some tax loss harvesting going. Yeah. So let's get into these new IPOs.
Then it takes off right after you sell.
I know. We talk about something else. And I remind them, you can't kiss all the girls. Okay?
Yes, that is your expression.
Or if it's a woman, I'll say all the boys. Sorry, you can't kiss all the boys, Andrea.
Why do you have to add my name to it?
So let's talk about some of these big IPOs coming up. So SpaceX is the big one, right? Because this is one of these mega companies that not only is it big, it's also coming first, right? And just to put it in perspective, SpaceX is coming in at a valuation, meaning the value of the business, somewhere between $1.75 trillion and $2.3 trillion. So just to put that in perspective, they want, let's just say they get to the lower end of their range for SpaceX, $1.7 trillion. Meta, which has been around for 14 years, which makes, you know, billions and billions of dollars in sales. Meta is valued at $1.5 trillion. So this upstart company, it's been around for a little bit of time, backed by Elon Musk. It's coming in at a valuation that's even higher than one of the biggest and most profitable companies in the country. I'm just saying that feels expensive unless this company is going to produce profits like we've never seen before.
Right.
So my concern about this stock, and again, we're not telling you to buy or not to buy, right? Like that price is like, It's funny, it's SpaceX, and the valuation is in space, for real.
It's I don't see the profits here.
Yeah. So breaking down the numbers, so SpaceX, first of all, let me break down the business model, and then we'll get into the numbers. So number one, you got the core space business, which is like literally launching rocket ships, okay? They've got a bunch of government contracts, right? Because NASA, they contract with SpaceX.
Yeah.
Right? $22 billion worth of federal contracts today. The Department of Defense, like that's a big part of their business. Mm-hmm. It's like sending stuff into space. It could be satellites. It could be like they're talking about going to Mars, all types of stuff.
All kinds of conflicts of interest here, but
listen,
we're not here to talk about that today.
You've got Starlink, which is their satellite business. Right. And then interestingly, you've got XAI, aka Grok, which is part of Twitter, which is part of Elon Musk's enterprise. He's rolled XAI into SpaceX. So you get a rocket ship company, a satellite company, and you get an AI company all in one.
Sounds like I feel an antitrust lawsuit coming on. It's too much. This too much.
Okay. So just to put this in perspective, again, SpaceX coming in at a valuation that is higher than Meta, right? And I'm just using this as a they're completely different businesses. Both are in AI. Both are in AI.
Right.
Meta, as far as I know, they're not sending ships to the moon or anything like that. Right. But Meta has annual sales in the last 12 months, $214 billion.
With a B.
Yeah, $214 billion. Now, you don't know all the numbers on SpaceX for real, but they're saying that last year their sales were $18 billion. So
cooked books. More
valuable, less sales by almost a 10x, like 11x factor.
I can't reconcile that though.
So you're saying Meta's worth, let's just say, $1.5 trillion off 200 something billion of sales, and this other company's new company's worth does 18 billion, 10% of that, and it's worth the same.
Right.
All right. Now let's look at profit. And again, I'm just using Meta as an example. I'm not telling you to buy that stock, none of that. In terms of profit, Meta made about 70 billion in net income on $214 billion of revenue. SpaceX, according to its filings, they lost about $5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So lower sales, losing money,
right?
More valuable.
Math ain't mathin'.
When you're buying a stock, it's like price is what you pay, value is what you get. Like the value comes from the profits.
Right.
Like it's a great set of businesses. Like all of these things, like futuristic and like,
all true.
The price is what I'm talking about.
Right.
Not saying the company's bad. I'm just saying the price feels high. Let's go to the next one, OpenAI. OpenAI is looking for a valuation range of about $850 billion to a trillion. Their revenue also about $20 billion, right? So their revenue is very similar, actually a little bit more than SpaceX. The valuation is a little bit less. So you could say if I compare OpenAI to SpaceX, OpenAI is cheaper, right? But at the same time, very far off from where the public companies are valued.
Yeah.
We look at the next one. We got Anthropic. Anthropic is the developer of Claude. One thing I like about Anthropic versus all these other AI companies, it seems like Anthropic has at least been tough against the Trump administration trying to force it to do stuff. And I respect that.
I thought you were going to say Claude. That's what you like the most about Anthropic.
Yeah, well, Claude is coming for our jobs too, FYI. All these companies are coming for us, by the way.
Yeah.
But this company, you know, they're looking to value it in the 180 to 350 billion range. Like, these are all really big valuations. In fact, if any of these companies hit these numbers, any of these companies would be the biggest IPO valuations of all time. Because the biggest so far was Alibaba at 170, right? The smallest one we've talked about so far, we're talking about Anthropic at 180, right? Like, these are going to be really big. And then finally, you got Databricks. Databricks is like enterprise AI. It's more of like an infrastructure AI play.
Mm-hmm.
Another really big one. So things that you got to understand if you're looking at an IPO. Let's just get into that. These are just general things now. I know we've kind of beaten down.
I like this one, though.
Yeah, we've beaten you up down about these prices and how to look at it. But Dre, why don't you get into the IPO reality check?
So reality number one. I like this description. You're buying on the fifth floor, not the ground floor.
Yeah.
What does that really mean? So when a company goes public, the true ground floor opportunity, if you will, has already passed, really.
Mm-hmm.
By the time regular people, we call them retail investors, can buy shares on Wall Street, the venture capitalists, the private equity firms, the angel investors, they've already put capital in the prior years. They bought in at lower prices, sometimes pennies on the dollar, compared to the public offering price.
Mm-hmm.
So then the IPO is really their opportunity to get out and lock in those early stage profits.
And can I just stay there for a second?
Mm-hmm.
So if I am Elon Musk, you see why he wants to go public now?
Oh, of course.
He put in pennies. He's trying to be a trillionaire.
Right.
If he can get this thing off the ground quicker than OpenAI, get this $1.5 trillion valuation, he owns a big percentage of that company, SpaceX. Yeah. And like, it's us.
Right. They've already made a ton of money.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that us can't make money too, but it's not going to be at the same level.
Yeah.
Or the same level of return that the early investors, the true early investors on the ground floor and the lower floors, not where they got in.
Yeah. Next, just because there's a lot of hype and excitement doesn't mean you're going to make a lot of money off of it.
That's with any stock. Some stocks get hot. The companies get hot, but that doesn't mean they're profitable.
Yeah. Ultimately, like, the thing that drives the value of a stock over time, the price of a stock over time, it's its profits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you only follow one thing about a stock, it's the profit you need to be watching.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't the excitement. It's not everybody talking about it.
And it's not just the sales. The profit is the sales minus expenses.
Yeah, facts. Next, IPOs often underperform. Again, we looked at the top 10 largest deals, and it's like a coin toss as to whether they are worth more or less than where they started. Number four.
Going public is a fundraising event, not a stamp of financial strength.
Word.
So going back to that ground floor versus fifth floor concept, it's kind of like it's really to raise capital.
Yeah.
And other people are going to get paid. It doesn't mean you can't get paid, but it doesn't mean it's a sign of financial strength. So you really have to understand the fundamentals of the business and how that company makes money.
Yeah, we just explained, SpaceX is losing $5 billion a year. That means if they don't raise money, they're going to be out of business.
Yeah.
They're not bringing it in revenue-wise fast enough to cover all their expenses.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it's a strong company. Like,
right.
They need this. It's like,
it can get all the attention in the world. Like, think about it.
Yeah.
The current occupant of the White House is a great marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And can generate a buzz. But like, sometimes there's nothing really behind it.
Yeah. Think about, it's going to sound so messed up, but this is the analogy that God gave me now.
Oh, Lord. Oh, now we blaming God. Let me see. Let me see.
All right. You're dating the guy that's like the struggling rapper and you're helping to pay his lifestyle because he hopes to make it big one day.
Mm-hmm.
But like right now, he's a liability. He's losing money.
Yeah.
Like he's eating a lot of food and not bringing in a lot of income. I mean, that's what some of these IPOs are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they are strong. They need money. Like the Joker's sleeping on your couch. And then finally, there's a big risk spectrum on IPO. Some do really, really well like Meta, and some do really, really poorly like Rivian.
Yeah.
Some don't exist anymore.
Right.
Think about the tech bubble and all those companies that went public.
Probably can't remember them.
Yeah, like cookies.com. Like,
it's a while ago for us now.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But yeah.
So
cookies.com was really a thing?
I mean,
you were just okay.
I'm sure it was.
I'm a foodie. I would like to have known.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look it up.
So we're talking today about the next big thing. Dre's gotta dip out though. You're leaving right now, right? Because I want to get into this next part.
I'm afraid so.
All right. Dre's got another commitment, but we're gonna keep the party going. I'm gonna try to do these last 10 minutes by myself.
You got it.
Dre's
gonna listen and evaluate
in spirit.
Yes.
Can you judge also? I want you to judge.
I said I was going to evaluate.
No, judge.
That's different than evaluating?
Judge is shady. Evaluate is proper.
Okay.
I want you to judge it
judge it.
I think you kind of needed me on that.
I'll be thinking about what I would have said had I been here for it. But right, you got it. You good.
Appreciate you. So we'll come back after the break and your boy will be here solo for a couple minutes. But I appreciate you hanging out with your guy.
We still the Momentum Advisors.
Okay.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer. By myself. Solo mission.
For the last segment. You got it.
Ooh, it's the pathway to freedom. It's leading to the North Star. Momentum.
All right, so we're back. The topic today is the next hot thing. We beat down these IPOs that are coming. Like, I'm actually excited about the companies. I think the companies themselves are exciting. If I had my druthers, I probably would prefer that Elon Musk's company not be the first one of the group to go public, but whatever. This is the market we're given. But let's talk a little bit about these coins, because I'm getting a lot of calls and emails about these coins. And I just want y'all to understand that, like, we talked about this already. Like, there's a lot of coins. There's, like, real cryptos, there's, like, 30,000 of them. There's more cryptocurrencies than there are stocks right now. And cryptocurrencies don't have anywhere near the regulatory framework that stocks do. And then out in the shadows, you've got these things called meme coins. Now, meme coins are literally just like, I won't say that they're a joke, like you can make money off of them, but literally anyone can make a meme coin and they could do it in like days. They can make up a fake article encouraging you to buy into it. There's a lot of like fraud that's happening with these things, like pump and dump schemes. Like, let me get everybody excited about these coins while I sneak out the back door and sell. So let me break down these meme coins a little bit. So in the first 2 weeks of January alone, there were over 620,000 new tokens created. Literally tens of thousands of tokens every single day. And it's not that like there's so much innovation happening. It's just that it's easier to do. Like you can use AI. You don't need any coding skills. Like it's just easier for folks to bring these things to market. So what is a meme coin? A meme coin is a cryptocurrency that is created almost as a joke, a cultural reference, or based on an internet meme. What's different about a meme coin when you compare it to traditional cryptocurrencies is that it's not backed by anything. Like there's no underlying business, there's no assets, no revenue, no products, no technology. There's no fundamental economic value. Instead, their value is 100% driven by internet hype, community sentiment, social media, etc. And people often say like, well, money isn't worth anything either. Like the greenbacks in your pocket aren't worth anything. They're not backed by gold or anything like that. But, you know, dollars are accepted across the planet as a medium of exchange. Like even Bitcoin isn't that powerful just yet. But these meme coins really have even less of an economic value. So how do they work? So number one, meme coins have zero utility. Like you don't have like an asset that's producing profits or anything like that. It's useless. It's a lot of times right on the website, it says that these are for entertainment purposes only. There's a lot of volatility in these meme coins. They can skyrocket by like thousands of percentages in a given weekend. Like a celebrity might tweet about them. There might be a rally about it because of TikTok. Like some of the big ones that have come out, like Dogecoin was a big one that people were talking about. Then it was Shiba Inu. I can't even say it. SHIB, another one, which was a meme coin that blew up. It went really well and then it fizzled. Let me tell you about this coin that my client hit me up about. And again, I'm just going to give this as an example because I think it's really important to see how these coins are created. And I'm not like, maybe this coin turns out to be the next big thing. I don't know. But like, I looked into it and nothing I found about it seemed compelling. The coin was called the United Nations Oil Supply, right? And in marketing it, it seems like it's like backed by the UN. Like it's tied somehow to this war in Iran, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. But in reality, although it sounds really official, this is nothing more than a meme coin. They're using this linkage to this institution, the United Nations, to just make it seem more official. They're, you know, it's one of these 50 million meme coins that have been invented, one of the 600,000 that have come out since the beginning of this year, or actually in the month of January alone. So this coin has, it tells you, like when you like dive into the disclaimers, because all of these things, they've got literature you can read about. And the disclaimer says, this is for entertainment purposes only. It is not related to the actual United Nations. It says in there that there is no physical backing. There's no oil reserves. There's no contracts. There's no energy being produced. It's really just about marketing the thing. I would say that that's deceptive. Like, why are you bringing the United Nations into this? Why are you bringing the oil supply into this? So, like, these things are trading at, like, fractions of pennies. And the people that put them together hope that they'll be worth a penny one day. They'll make a killing. But, like, sometimes these things go really badly. So, 2021, there was a Squid Game token that was created. If y'all remember the movie, or I guess there's a series on Netflix called Squid Game. And I'll tell you, I was only able to watch the first season. Like, there's so much killing in that show. And I guess I'm not a real G. I couldn't get through the rest of Squid Game. So I watched it. I was like watching it with one hand over my eye. But what I didn't know is that somebody created a Squid Game token. And what they did was they basically named it after Squid Game. and they coded a malicious backdoor software glitch into the token that literally blocked anyone who bought the Squid Game coin from being able to sell it. And once the price went up, it went from 1 penny to over $2,800. The developers, the owners, they flipped the switch, they dumped everything, and they walked away with $12 million, and then they deleted their website. It's crazy. It's happening. And what's really crazy is like the SEC, like they're not giving you the green light to do fraud, but they're basically saying like in their official statement that like meme coins are not classified as securities. Like securities is like stocks, bonds, it's regulated. They're basically saying like, look, this ain't like buyer beware. Like this ain't our fault. We ain't part of this. And if you buy in, that's on you. Now they are also saying, look, it's not a free pass for you to do fraud. Right. And like if they find that people are doing these pump and dump things, not only will the SEC or the Department of Justice get involved, there's also state regulators that'll get involved. And like you can go to jail for this stuff. But because they're not registered, it's not even on the SEC's radar screen. Like when a company goes public, they've got to give documents to the government to be reviewed. That means that somebody in the government is looking out to see what happens next, what happens after this IPO paperwork got filed. With these meme coins, you know, I could create one in a weekend. I could build in some malicious code that keeps you from being able to sell. And like you could be really in for a disaster with these meme coins. Here's some final stats before we run on these pump and dump schemes with meme coins. 98% of meme coins are worthless shortly after they launch. Like there's a bunch of excitement at the beginning, and then it fizzles really, really quick. Like you could lose like not all your money quickly, but like you could be down 60, 70%, way more volatile than anything in the stock market. 93% of the time, there's a study that showed that there's a clear sign that the rug got pulled, meaning like the creators like were pumping it, getting people all excited about it. And then you can see that they abruptly drained all their money out of that coin. Now, before I go, I do want to talk about another coin situation, right? Because after this presidential election, I started getting calls from some of our right-leaning clients who were like, look, I want in on this Trump meme coin. And yeah, when it got built just like that United Nations coin on the Solana blockchain. The website, just like for the United Nations coin, said, look, this has no utility, no business plan, no cash flow. It's basically just a digital collectible just for supporters. And immediately after the launch, the token went up a ton. It got up to a $27 billion market cap. Trump himself made $20 billion off this coin when it got all the way up to $73 per coin. But just like all of these meme coins, later on, people didn't want it anymore. It dropped by 95%. It dropped from $73 down to $2. What used to be worth $27 billion is now worth $487 million. I don't know if the Trump family sold out of that coin. I would suspect they took some billions off the table with that. That's a meme coin. There's also like other coins that the Trump family's been involved in, like World Liberty Financial. Now this one's actually a business, like it's a utility driven crypto, like it's designed to be a business model, right? It's a sort of a system for lending and borrowing and managing digital assets. It's not a meme coin, it's considered a governance token. Like if you buy this token, like you, it's almost like you bought shares in a stock. Like you have some voting rights, you get to understand how the thing works. This was a controversial company though, right? So like World Liberty hit an all-time high of 33 cents and it dropped back down to 6 cents. There's a bunch of people that invested that ended up suing. Like these coins, they come, they go, and you just got to be really, really careful. So before I wrap up, I'll just say this, like no matter whether it's a coin, whether it's a stock, whether it's a new bond, take your time and do the research. Like ask yourself, like, have I read through the documents? If it's a coin, maybe have I visited the website and read all that fine print that we like to skip past? If it's a stock, have I read the prospectus? Look for things like, are they making revenue? Is there a profit? What is the value of the company relative to that profit? Again, think about it like a restaurant. Would I buy a restaurant that gives me $100,000 in profit but costs $20 million to buy? That's crazy expensive. Next, be cautious when you're looking at any investment. Like, be skeptical. Like, anytime I look at any investment, and this could be like a company stock, this could be a private fund, this could be a startup, I always start with a certain amount of skepticism. Like, yo, tell me what's wrong with this company. Like, what could go wrong with this company? Why would I not want to invest? What's the worst that I think could happen with this company? And am I comfortable with that worst case? And then finally, ask yourself, are you willing to stick it out long enough to see what happens, right? Because when I think about investing, I always say it involves taking your money, mixing it with an opportunity, and then giving it time. Are you willing to give it the time it takes to get a return? Like I mentioned Meta stock. Like I, for vanity reasons, got out of that stock just because it was down. I regret that today. Like this whole time since the company went public 14 years ago and today, I've probably checked either Facebook or Instagram or used WhatsApp almost every one of those days. And yet there were times when I wasn't confident enough to keep owning that stock. So you got to have your time frame in mind. And sometimes you do have to take some chances, and hopefully they're educated chances when you pull the trigger on investments. So we've talked a lot today about the next hot thing. A lot of this might require you to talk it over with a professional. If you want to meet with us, feel free to visit our website, momentum-advisors.com/contact. You can schedule time with myself or with Andrea. And that's it. Dre came back for a sec. Okay, what up, Dre?
You are funny. You're hilarious.
You must have forgot your keys or something like that. Either way, I appreciate you. Keep listening. We'll be back next week.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered financial, investment, tax, or legal advice. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and are based on information believed to be reliable at the time of the recording, but no representation of warranty is made as to their accuracy or completeness.
This podcast does not provide personalized recommendations. Before making any financial or investment decisions, you should consult with a qualified professional who can assess your individual circumstances. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal.